Welcome to the Subscription League, a podcast by Purchasly. Listen to what's working in subscription apps. In each episode, we invite leaders of the app industry who are mastering the subscription model for mobile apps. To learn more about subscriptions, head to subscriptionleague.com. Let's get started.
Welcome to the show. Today, Jeff and I have the pleasure to interview someone most mobile developers know, or at least have used this service, Felix Kraus. He is the founder at Context SDK. Welcome to the show, Felix.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm great. Super happy to welcome Felix, as we've all been as developer user of his previous ventures. And I'm really happy to unveil what he's doing right now at Context SDK. Welcome, Felix.
So Jeff and I know you, Felix, from our background as mobile dev, because you've created Fastlane, which is an open source library used to easily ship and deploy mobile apps. And it ended up being bought by Twitter and then Google. And if I'm not mistaken, you started that as a university project. So can you tell us a little bit about it and that journey from university all the way to, you know, full-time paying gig and being famous in our work?
Yeah, so Fastlane started out as, you know, a project to solve a problem that I had myself, which is, you know, releasing iOS apps. And back then, you know, tooling and in particular Xcode was not as good as it is today. Mm-hmm. The community was already building, you know, tooling to improve the development process. So stuff like CocoaPods, or back then there was this tool set called Nomad Tools, like Shenzhen by Matt Thompson. They were all written in Ruby, which is also why Fastlane is written in Ruby. Back then there was no Swift, which, you know, is painful now to have, you know, have to set up Ruby to get it to work. But that's the reason why it started out like this. It all started out again because I solved my own problem, which was, you know, uploading localized screenshots, creating those screenshots, dealing with code signing. And I remember during my second internship, I was working at Wunderlist, which was like a to-do list app from Berlin. And we were three people just sitting for the full day only uploading screenshots because they supported every single language there is.
Oh, yeah.
And every single device type. So that's kind of like how it all started. And so during university, I took the time to like sketch out a tool on what it could look like, build it, open sourced it. And that's kind of like how it started. And with every single release, and back then it wasn't Fastlane as a whole, but it was a few smaller tools that in the beginning didn't even work together. With every single launch, there was more and more traction on Twitter. So I built up my Twitter follower base, I built up a little newsletter around that, and it grew more and more. And in the end, I had multiple options to proceed on, like, be, you know, starting my own business around Fastlane, or what I decided on is joining Twitter to work on it full time, so I don't have to focus on, you know, revenue and finances, but I can just focus on what's best for the user.
Nice, that's nice. And it's nice to be reminded of what iOS development looked like back in the days. Like, we were there, we suffered through those same issues, and it's nice to meet the person that essentially helped us not have that issue anymore. And so you've gone Twitter first, then Google. Those are, you know, two very large US company, and I'm sure they have some different cultures. And like, what was the experience of working in those company like, and any big difference that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, so we got moved over to from Twitter to Google, mostly because they, like, Google bought the whole developer toolset for mobile apps from Twitter. Twitter back then was kind of like refocusing on the core product, which was the social network. And very early on, Twitter started this toolset called Fabric, which would allow them to be a player in the mobile dev ecosystem, because they don't have an operating system. Because back then they thought they were like Facebook, like they are like a platform. So I think it didn't pan out like this. That's why they ended up selling Fabric, and back then Fastlane was part of that. That's kind of like how I got moved over to Google, and the transition was very smooth and very easy. And the reason being is that I remember back then at Twitter, people were always talking about how the cultures are very, very similar, because Twitter's engineering team was mostly previous Googlers. So a lot of Googlers switched over to Twitter apparently, and they were the ones building out how, you know, performance cycle works, how software is being built, how teams are being structured. And also from the developer toolset, back then Google already had Firebase, which was also an acquisition from Google's end, and they had very aligned tools. And so whatever tool was better ended up being the one that stayed. So Crashlytics is obviously number one. So Firebase, CrashReporter, got basically thrown away and replaced with, I think it's still called Firebase Crashlytics or just Firebase Crash Reporting, but under the hood, that's Crashlytics.
Interesting. It's very interesting to hear kind of those stories of the culture and how those teams evolved and see, you know, how Twitter is in the news every day. Well, not every day today, but has been in the news for various things. So
there's also a thing that like to explore is that you've been working in California and you moved back to Europe. So coming from Europe, California, and back to Europe, there's also a big shift in your learnings. Can you tell us a little bit about how different is the European startup ecosystem from when you left Europe and came back?
Yeah, so in between, I lived in both California, but then I also lived in New York for like 2.5 years. To be honest, I think the biggest shift is probably, I mean, it maybe sounds boring, but around remote work. Like suddenly if you're in Europe, you can just work for a US company, no problem. You just have to consider the time zones. I think that's one of the biggest shifts, and it suddenly allows at least individuals to easily work closer together with US companies.
Which is actually interesting too, because I think some companies are coming back a little bit from that remote work. So we'll see in a couple of years where that lands, if that remains a trend to be able to work for this US company more easily or not. But enough talking about the past. You're actually working on Context SDK now. Can you tell us what it is?
Yeah, so Context SDK is a project or an idea that I had for, I believe, a little bit over 5 years. And I had this idea initially when I was driving from my parents' house and was driving back home, I think. And I wanted to play some music, and the music app I was using back then, I couldn't press the button to play my playlist, and there was no CarPlay back then. So I had that because there was a pop-up covering the area. So I pulled over to see what it said, and it was some very unnecessary pop-up. It was something like, you know, welcome to the new version of this app, like see what's new in this update. And in this case, I was actually interested in what's new. I was like, hey, you're showing a pop-up, like it must be something cool. But right now was not the right moment. Like I had to remember that once I arrive home, I want to open up that app to see what's new. And so I felt like, well, this is so, it should be so obvious for an app to realize what's the context. Like, is now a good moment to show something? Because we have all these really powerful sensors and you can do on-device processing. You don't even need to do anything, you know, with remote servers and stuff. You could just check like, hey, is this now, like, are you in a car? Are you walking around, or are you just sitting or, you know, being in a more calm environment? And back then I was still employed, working on a few other projects. And once I finished my last project, I was looking into what's next and I realized, wait, this is still something on my list and nobody seems to have built it. And there might be a reason why no one built it. You never know. But I was like, with Fastlane, I had something very similar. I remember when I built this tool for push notifications and you had to like copy and paste commands into the terminal. I always felt like, wait, this doesn't seem right. Like, this is something very basic I'm doing. Like, why do I need to do some weird encryption stuff or like private public key for setting up push? And so I just built a tool to see, you know, to see what people are saying, as in, you know, instead of asking for advice, just post an answer and get corrected by the community. Mm-hmm. And so with Context SDK, it was kind of similar. Like, maybe there's a reason why no one built it, but let's just build it and see what it's like. And so in this case, initially, it was very much focused on just detecting the type of activity that you are on. So it would be something like, are you currently driving? Are you currently walking? Are you currently sitting? Very basic, high level. And this would be all on device through on device machine learning execution. And then you could do something like, hey, don't show this pop-up in a car. That was the initial idea. And very early on, I realized when I was working with potential users of this SDK, like, well, they still have to figure out, you know, how the app behaves on those different situations. Like, you would just end up with a lot of if-else statements on, like, is the user walking right now? Is the user driving right now? And so very soon, Context SDK has shifted over to something a little bit more abstract, which is just telling Context SDK optimize for this specific outcome. So this could be something like, hey, you show this update prompt, like, hey, what's new in this version? And the positive outcome would be the user opening up that prompt and reading what's new. The negative outcome would be the user dismissing it. And based on that, we can learn to see which kind of situations are positive versus negative.
Yeah. Speaking about outcomes, I know that the company and the tech is still very young, but what are the use cases you see for Context SDK, like concrete use cases? And do you have any numbers or case study that you could share with us?
Yeah, so when it comes to use cases, the first one we focused on was the topic of in-app subscription and in-app upsells, which we believe is the most obvious way to build a business. As in, you know, it's hard to sell something that's only nice to have and build a business around it. So selling the increased conversion rate for upsells was something that's more compelling for potential customers. So that was the first one. The second one we focused on the last few weeks, and we just launched a little product around, is the app tracking transparency prompt. So a lot of ad-based apps, so the other one is in-app purchases, but the other approach would be advertising. They have to use this ATT opt-in, and depending on the opt-in rate, they make different kinds of money. And so one customer we talked with, they said, like, if we can help them increase the ATT opt-in rate by 10%, they would make around 5 to 7% more revenue. So that was something like, whoa, this is interesting. Like, this is something we can help with, find the right moment to ask the user for consent.
If you can just make it so that it doesn't launch just, you know, show at the same time as the app launch, that would be great.
Exactly. So right now the approach for many companies, also for in-app subscription, I think Jeff has some experience there, is to just show it right away, because that's where you have the highest exposure, right? Because everybody who launches that once will get it. But what we are trying to focus on is like the long-term value, the LTV of those apps and those users. So by showing the prompt later and being less annoying to the user, we believe that you'll end up with less annoyed users, more positive attitude towards your app, less churn, and overall, hopefully more revenue. Those are the first two use cases. We do have many other use cases. So it's just in general permission prompts, similarly annoying. We can help time those at right moments. We have all these like in-app messaging. So that would be something like the update message. That would be anything you want to communicate, which may also include like new features. And I think Apple has launched like a framework to help you introduce new features with this popover, but they don't help you again find the timing. And I think Apple's app are actually really bad offenders of that, because like if you launch, every time I launch Pages or Keynote on my Mac, there's always this big full screen like, hey, see what's new. Like, I really don't care. I just want to open up this, you know, Excel file.
Same thing when you have a new iPhone that you install. They have all the apps telling you, hey, what's new, what's new, what's new? Yeah, I don't care about what's new. I just want to use my phone right now. Same kind of trouble that you have.
Exactly. Yeah. And so for the case studies, because you asked, so obviously Context SDK is still pretty new. So we don't really have long-term studies yet, but we're working on that because that's obviously critical. We do have the first numbers and reports that came out. And one interesting thing is that for one really large app, we were able to improve the conversion rate by a few percent. I think it was like 8 or 9% or something, improve the conversion rate. And by that, we were not too excited, because for like smaller apps, we sometimes saw an even better conversion rate increase. So we were a little bit disappointed, but like, okay, let's, you know, look into this and get better at this. But what's interesting is that this customer was actually really excited, because what they did is they saw the lifetime value increase by a lot more. So it was like 20% lifetime value increase in those cases for these buckets, because they did a regular A/B test. So that kind of proves our assumption, and something that I believe most humans would just agree with, which is like, hey, if you're less annoying and like if you show less pop-ups and ask at the right time, long term, people are going to be less annoyed, they're going to churn less, and they are maybe more likely to upgrade. At least that's our core assumption here. And the problem, obviously, with selling or like providing a service like this is that customers want to see raw data. Like, hey, is this going to make more money, or is this just going to be something to be nice to the user? And so far, it looks really promising. Obviously, it still takes time to put all these things together and like analyze the data more, but that's kind of like where we're at.
Yeah, that's a great promise here. You're moving from a tech tool, providing a tech tool, to a real marketing tool. I believe that it could go even further, being a product tool, because once you will educate all the market about the importance of context in building apps and promoting experiences, it will go way further, or it could go way further than just the monetization and the ATT prompts, but also shape differently how we build UIs. That's a long question. What are the differences between providing a tech tool for developers and providing a marketing tool for marketers or growth managers?
Yeah, so to your first part of the question, it's a very interesting perspective, and that's how we see it also, which is, hey, is this kind of like the future of how you build apps? Instead of being, you know, very static and just having those hard-coded rules, be it powered by ML, like all these tech companies are obviously always talking about it, but you know, those kinds of things work. Like just even basic statistics and data analysis already helps. So maybe Context SDK can be the foundation of how you build new apps. We don't yet have specific plans for it, because as you know, just throwing screens into like a bucket and letting Context SDK figure out the order, that's something we could do, and that's something we're thinking about. But obviously it comes with complexities. Like for example, to edit an item in an app, like you need to first have that item open. Like it's just going to be very, very difficult on how can you structure the app, but still have this fluid movement of Context SDK. So yeah, it could be something way bigger, and we're building it in a way that allows us to do those kinds of things. And it's mostly about talking with potential customers and users on how it would integrate with their stack. To your second question around building a developer tool versus marketing growth revenue tool, that is a big one because obviously I am a developer myself, so I can build developer tools really well, I would say. Fastlane was one of them. It was very much focused on the iOS developer, just seeing it and then installing it, setting it up and using it. It's very easy for me to also speak their language. And so now it's a big shift. Context SDK initially was also a developer tool, as mentioned, it's here to help you detect if the user is like walking, sitting, stuff like that. And now shifted to be focused on marketing growth and so on. That's also why the name is Context SDK, but I would say SDK is a very developer heavy phrase. Unfortunately, all the just context domains are taken because that would be an ideal name, I think. So yeah, and now it has to shift, and it's interesting, right? Like it's the just even the language and like the way things are phrased is so different that I sometimes really have to just trust, in this case, my co-founder, who is way better at speaking to people in marketing and growth and so on. And just, yeah, I would do it differently, but also I'm a developer, not a target group for this service anymore. So it comes with challenges for sure. And it makes it harder because like reaching developers for me is easy because I, you know, you have Twitter, you have your friends there, you know the newsletters, you know the in and outs, you know the conferences. But then suddenly it's like a whole different, how do you say, like job group, and I don't know where they hang out.
Yeah, it's a different ecosystem to hang out with the marketing folks than with the developer folks. You mentioned that Context SDK is essentially using machine learning to give the recommendation as to when to do certain tasks. What does this setup look like in an app to get Context SDK? Like, is there training that needs to happen, or what? Yeah, what do we have to do?
Yeah, one thing Context SDK from the very beginning was focused on privacy. So one ground rule we have is that we never create, use, or process any PII, so any information that's specific to a person. And therefore, we are exempt from most privacy laws, because if data entry is not, you know, associated with a person or a device, like, and cannot be, you cannot find out who it was, like, then it doesn't fall into those categories. That was like a ground rule. But as you mentioned, we do use machine learning. Machine learning needs a high amount of data, and there are different types. And one type that Apple does a lot is the on-device machine learning, which actually learns based on your behavior on your phone. But what we need to do is, like, people don't use a specific app like too often. So they would just launch the app a few times. You already need a model to help you optimize. So what we do when you integrate Context SDK, you set it up in a calibration mode, which would allow us to calibrate all the signals. We have around 170 device signals that we consider, anything from like motion data, time of the day, battery status, like all harmless but very useful stuff to calculate the likelihood of somebody engaging or using certain features at that moment. And so we would calibrate those signals, and they get sent to our servers, again, fully anonymized, together with the outcome. Like, did the user upgrade now or did they not upgrade? And based on that, we can train a machine learning model. And as you know, training a machine learning model can be very expensive and very CPU intensive. So you need a lot of computer power. And that allows us to pre-train those models. And that's what's interesting, because then you have this pre-trained model that you can ship with your app, and then all the decisions can happen on device instantly. So we would actually provide their own SDK binary for every single customer we have with that pre-trained model already included. And so I built a mini Fastlane for SDKs, basically. So I think that's also very unique, because usually you have one SDK for all your customers, right? And then you have options, but we actually have custom builds for every single one.
Oh.
Yeah, and then they ship that update and they have the model included. And from then on, all the decisions happen on device.
Nice. And so, I mean, you mentioned the privacy is, and you're not processing any PIIs or, I mean, anything identifiable. Have you received any concerns from user about, you know, the SDK knowing more than what they feel comfortable sharing potentially? And I know it's not identifiable information, but, you know, knowing that somebody can have, or something knows about the context of you using the app. Have you got any pushback on that, or?
Currently not yet. So our customers would be the companies that use our SDK. But I assume you're talking about the end users, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure maybe the companies or the users have talked to, you know, the publisher of the app, or, I mean, any feedback you might have had, I guess.
Yeah. So far, there hasn't been any pushback neither by European nor by US companies. And I think that's for a few reasons. One is that we are always very clear on our marketing materials, but also our documentation on how we process data. We're very transparent on what data we use. Mm-hmm. And again, that it's not specific to a person. The second one that comes from our direct customers would be the trust that we have in the community. As you may know, I've worked on a lot of different privacy and security projects on iOS and disclosed a few loopholes in Apple ecosystems. I think there is a good amount of trust there. It's something we'll constantly have to work on, though, around communication and being transparent and so on. And we, once we have enough customers, what we aim to do also is to have a version of the SDK that's not self-learning or not calibrating. So, for example, if you have a certain kind of app, we can already offer you a trained machine learning model for your type of app, for example. Because what we see is we have those custom models for each of our customers. And that's so important because each app is used in different situations. Like, for example, if you launch a fitness app, it's going to be used in a very different situation than a dating app, for example. And also, not just when you launch it, but also your customer base, your user base is going to be different, right? So you launch it at different times of the day, your different age group, stuff like that. So one random interesting find was the battery level. It's a very simple signal that usually doesn't mean too much, but for one fitness app, we found that it decreased the conversion by a lot, by like, I think it was like 60, 70% or something. If the battery level is below, I think it was like 5% or something. But it was like a fitness app, right? So you record your workout or something, like you don't want your phone to die while you do that. And then we have another app that's like more focused towards like Gen Z, like very young users. And turns out they really couldn't care less about battery. Like it's literally completely flat. So it's that's why we have this calibration phase to calibrate our signals. And that's how we achieve the best performance.
Great. There's one thing I'd like to talk about. And I'm sure Olivier, same, you've been facing the same kind of issues. When you integrate an SDK, an external SDK, this marketing team say, hey, I want you to insert that new ad SDK within your app and you uncover the things and say, oh, wow, they're using this and these APIs and the SDK is really bad. And it's always like a fight between marketing and tech, and we always lose as tech people. And I'm sure like every developer listening to the podcast right now have faced this kind of situation. And I know that when we built the first version of Purchasely, we really wanted to develop the SDK, an SDK that we would love using and integrating. So easy to integrate, well documented, lightweight, respecting the privacy of the users, etc. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, Felix, because I'm sure that you've pushed that really, really far with Context SDK, being a good citizen.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I think you and I have a very similar view on this and opinion on this. Context SDK also is 100% written natively. It uses like, I think it's 700 kilobytes of added to your binary size, which is really nothing compared to what you describe around some advertising SDKs using, I think, up to 100 megabytes or something. You know, very little CPU usage when accessing it. I think it's like 0.2% or something. Like,
yeah,
battery usage and CPU usage, like bringing that down to basically nothing was a very satisfying and fun challenge, I would say. And I think it's so important because, yeah, if you provide an SDK, then it's going to be used on many tens of millions and more devices suddenly, right? So it has huge impact. And so I think you always want to be a good citizen for multiple reasons. One is towards Apple, which is obviously the platform, but also towards your users, like you're just using up the battery or whatever you're doing. So yeah, that's very much a big focus for us.
And so if our listeners want to learn more about Context SDK and how to use it and what it can do for them, where can they go?
So we have contextsdk.com. Right now, we are not self-serviced. So it has to be going through email right now to like onboard you, because also we have, you know, for every app, there's going to be some kind of different integration. So if you, for example, if you have paywalls and you have like a paywall on the first app store, it's going to be a different integration than if you're just upselling something sometimes. So we help you get that on board. Eventually, obviously, it should be fully automated. But right now, automating something where it still needs some handholding and help from us and some guidance from us wouldn't make sense. So yeah, contextsdk.com, and then we have like a contact form where you just fill out the basic number of active users and the name of your app. And the reason why we're asking for the number of active users is because our models are going to work differently. So the more users you have, the faster you're going to have your own custom model and the more precise that model is going
to
be.
Nice. And if people want to learn more about you, I actually found out that you're very active on social network, but you also have your own website with a bunch of stuff about you. So where can people learn more about you, Felix?
So I have a few starting points. One is krausfx.com, where I have my blog and some information about me, as well as my privacy publications on the iOS platform. And then I have this other website that I haven't worked on recently, but it's a big website, which is called howisfelix.today. And it's a huge quantified self dashboard. Mm-hmm. So it contains all this information about anything from the number of steps I took to my energy level, happiness level, or how many hours I was like in meetings. And so it's howisfelix.today. And it started out as a fun project to just show where I am, because initially it was called whereisfelix.today. So it was just showing like my flight schedule for like conferences and stuff that I spoke at. And then it kind of just escalated up to be a full quantified self dashboard, which was always kind of like a hobby of mine. I'm still recording all of these things every day now, but I haven't updated the graphs yet. The graphs are always snapshots because I still want to make sure that, you know, the data that's included there is not too personal.
Mm. It's actually interesting that you mentioned that website, because I went and read it, and the conclusion there was it was a great experience. I learned, you know, quite a bit about myself, but it was a lot of effort to do it. So it's very interesting to hear that you're actually still doing it and putting the effort in. So
it's
great.
Yeah. And it's, I think nowadays I would do it differently. Like Apple has launched some really cool Apple Health stuff, and even the journal app, which I haven't had a chance to try yet. But I remember the Apple Health app now has like mood tracking built in, for example, with a very nice like user interface and everything. So maybe I'll build something on top of that instead if I were to build it now. And the main conclusion was that you mentioned now was around the effort around building the data analysis tools, because like you need to set it up that you can even build those graphs. And to be honest, nowadays I would have way better tools and experience thanks to Context SDK, because like it's the topic of data science, right? And back then, if you don't know the tools, like if you as an iOS developer don't know how to use, I don't know, Xcode and like code signing, you're gonna have a hard time.
Yes.
That was me back then, not having any data science experience back then.
Nice. Well, thanks for joining us today. It was really nice to get all your answer and your perspective on your experiences and see where you're heading with Context SDK. Okay, so thanks for joining us today, Felix.
Yeah, thank you, Felix. And I hope we're going to have the opportunity to test both our technologies on a customer and see how both context and context trigger and contextual paywalls and experiences can leverage a better growth and LTV in subscription area.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Felix.
On behalf of the Purchasly team, thank you for listening to the Subscription League podcast. If you've enjoyed what you heard, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or other audio platform. To find out more about Purchasly and how we can improve your subscription business, visit purchasly.com. Please hit subscribe in your podcast player and don't miss any future episodes. You can also listen to previous episodes at subscriptionleague.com. See you soon!